Hello, Gal.
Hello.
You're welcome to the call.
Thank you.
This is Noam Shelliff in the Washington, D.C. office of Americans for Peace Now, and I think we can go ahead and begin now. This is a real key moment to be having this conversation. I don't know if everybody on the line has heard the recent news and breaking news that Hamas has apparently accepted some of the Egyptian conditions for a ceasefire. Just in the last hour, this report has come out. And I think it's a key lead-in to this conversation that we have with Galia Golan, one of Israel's premier political scientists and strategic thinkers, one of really the most veteran activists and leaders within the Peace Now movement. And we have her on the phone with us today to share with us her thoughts about the state of the crisis, where we've been and where we are, and hopefully where we're going. And I hope that she'd also shed some light on some of the activities that the Peace Now movement has undertaken to speak both to the Israeli government and to the Israeli people at this time. As you all know, Americans for Peace Now has been very active in the United States with our government, with Congress, and I look forward to hearing both Galia's analysis and some reports of the work that they've been doing.
Thank you. Noam, I thought I would speak first about this news of the ceasefire and the something of the Israeli public reaction and also Peace Now and what we've been doing. And then if we have time, perhaps talk a little bit about what we might expect once this conflict is over. Not that I have a very clear idea on that, but I think we ought to take a stab at a few guesses. But the first bit of news is, of course, the ceasefire or a possible ceasefire. I must say that there is a bit more optimism on the Israeli side than what is coming out of Egypt or Al Jazeera, for example. In other words, on the Israeli side, for 2 days now, there have been these rumors that Hamas is going to agree to a ceasefire, and the things that they've been saying over the past hour indicate that that there does seem to be some progress being made. That is to say, something did happen in Cairo, and the Israeli representative, General Gilad, is in fact going tomorrow to Cairo, and it was generally rumored that he would not go if there wasn't something serious to talk about. So there are certainly clear signs that Hamas has been a bit more forthcoming. And if that's the case, then it will be in Israel's decision whether or not to go ahead with a ceasefire. As you probably know, the major issues are, first of all, the length of a ceasefire, where Israel wants as long as possible. Generally, the talk is that the Israeli request is for 1 year ceasefire, whereas Hamas, according to rumors in any case, has not been willing to give more than half a year. And the other, even more important issue, perhaps, although it was not originally one of the objectives of the attack, at least as far as the public was told, but the other issue is the issue of smuggling on the border with Egypt, primarily the Philadelphia, where most of the tunnels have been dug. And here, too, it's not at all clear that Hamas has agreed or exactly what would be the arrangement there, because there's much talk of an international force, which Egypt did not want, and nor did Hamas want. We don't know what has been decided, but certainly that's become a critical issue for Israel. There have to be assurances of some kind that the smuggling will not be renewed. And then finally, there's the issue of opening the crossing points from Gaza into Israel and also, of course, into Egypt, the Rafah point. Hamas wants all the crossing points opened. Israel, I think, is willing to do that, but not necessarily in a blanket way, not necessarily all of them all the time, all at once. But in principle, Israel has known all along that would be one of the conditions of a new ceasefire. So those are the three major issues. Of course, Hamas said that they want Israel to withdraw before they'll do anything, but I don't think that's been necessarily taken seriously. Generally speaking, it's assumed that with the ceasefire, Israel would then begin to withdraw, because Israel has no intention of staying in Gaza. It never has had the intention of staying in Gaza, and while it may want to keep some areas as a security zone, which would be controversial, there's certainly no desire to actually keep forces in Gaza. So there are many issues here, and we don't know. We've been given absolutely no information. They made it very clear that no details are coming out as to just what has been agreed to by Hamas. The general sense has been that Hamas in Gaza, because of the suffering in Gaza, is willing to and interested in having a ceasefire. It was Hamas in Syria that's been more reluctant. And it may be that Hamas in Syria is beginning to change its mind. There was an interview given by Syrian President Assad today in which he talked about peace and talked about getting back to efforts for peace at the same time that Iran was calling for a jihad against Israel and so forth. So it's conceivable that Syria is pushing now a little bit more in a direction of a ceasefire, and that maybe Hamas inside Syria is softening its position. But this is all speculation, of course. Now, here in Israel, there is a poll regarding the public's interest in a ceasefire. And there has been a growth or an increase in the public's interest in a ceasefire. The percentages of those interested or desiring a ceasefire now have gone up, but they still do not constitute more than about 26% of the public. Close to 62% are in favor of continuing to fight, and I think that's a very important figure. This war, as you know, has had very, very, very strong support from the Israeli public, anywhere between 70% and 90%, depending upon the poll that's taken in any day. But it is very significant, I think, that such a large majority wants to continue fighting, and that apparently is the position of Ehud Olmert. But on the other hand, the part of the public that wants a ceasefire now is also growing, and I think it will get larger. That's to be expected. I think that if a ceasefire can be achieved in a way that Israel can present it as a victory, that is to say with some of the conditions that Israel wants, the public then would undoubtedly go for a ceasefire. We can talk about that in a minute, because obviously anything that Israel agrees to, it will present as a victory, the same way that Hamas is going to present anything that is achieved as a victory. And that's, of course, one of the problems of this war. I think we can talk about that a little bit later when we talk about what can be expected after the war. Just with regard to the ceasefire itself, there are continuous stories of differences of opinion within the Israeli government. As I said, Olmert has been quoted as wanting to continue to fight, to broaden the army's operations in Gaza and take more territory. It apparently is the case that Barak has been in favor of a ceasefire now for over a week, where he believes, or he says that he believes that Israel's objectives have been achieved. And actually, there's been some criticism of Barak's statements by Olmert. So we've got a little fighting going on right now between the leadership. Tzipi Livni has been in favor of a ceasefire, but she's not in favor of anything that might legitimize Hamas. Now, we don't know exactly what that means, because clearly, if there's going to be a ceasefire, one of the things that's happened is that Hamas has been legitimatized, because they are the party on the other side. And that brings me somewhat to this situation after, and what might or might not happen. It seems to be quite clear that Hamas is staying. Hamas leadership is still there, and I think that the government and the army knew that would be the case. They did not go into this war to destroy Hamas. At least they said that they didn't. They may have thought it was possible. Certainly the public in Israel would like to see Hamas destroyed, and I think many people probably believe that that is the reason that the army went in. But that was not a stated objective by the government, and it certainly looks like Hamas is going to stay. What it will be able to do once the war is over in terms of rebuilding Gaza, the devastation there has been tremendous. It's going to be clearly difficult. But there's another very interesting thing going on, and that is Hamas and Fatah are apparently talking to each other. There's apparently contact now between Hamas in Gaza and Fatah in sitting in Ramallah in the West Bank, which means that what's happening, and I think this may have a lot to do with Egypt and Egypt's pressure, what seems to be happening is the beginning of another attempt by Fatah and Hamas to reach a reconciliation and some kind of cooperation. I feel fairly certain that this was Egyptian pressure, and probably of the rest of the Arab world, because they have been very critical of the split between Hamas and Fatah, and really no progress can be made ultimately unless there's a legitimate leadership. Of course, Egypt would like to see the Palestine Authority, the PLO, meaning Fatah, back in Gaza in some capacity or another. Whether that will happen or not is difficult to say, but there does seem to be a plan or a program or an initiative to bring about another reconciliation between Hamas and Fatah so that there is a Palestinian leadership that can be dealt with after the war. One of the reasons for this is that there is a fear amongst the Palestinians, and I think also by the Egyptians, that one of Israel's objectives is to completely separate Gaza from the West Bank and have what's so-called the three-state solution, so to speak, and that this is one of the purposes of this attack on Gaza by Israel. And so it's particularly important from their point of view that there be some kind of reconciliation so that this kind of permanent split cannot take place. But that's it's going to be very, very difficult to move ahead after the war, because of course, in a way, Hamas will have been strengthened. While it's been weakened militarily, weakened physically, politically, they can claim that they survived and they're still around, and that's a victory for them. As in any guerrilla movement or any rebellion, basically, can always claim that. Just mere survival is sufficient to claim victory. While Abu Mazen and Fatah have been accused of collaboration with Israel and somehow being held responsible together with Israel for the devastation that's taken place. So it's going to be very complicated once it's over. We, for our part, just to mention what we have been doing here, from, I would say, about a week ago, prior to the land, the move by the army into Gaza, in other words, when we were still in the period of the air attacks alone, we came out in favor of a ceasefire on the assumption and on the argument that the air attacks had accomplished whatever was going to be accomplished in terms of demonstrating Israel's power, of retaining restoring Israel's deterrence capability, and basically making the point that Israel was not going to accept the rocket attacks. And so our call was at that point not to have a ground attack, not to have a ground invasion, because of all the destruction that it would cause to, in particular, to civilians, but not only. Also, the concern over Israeli soldiers and simply the toll it would take on both sides. We called for a ceasefire, and we called for talking before and instead of a ground attack. And we weren't alone in this call. As a matter of fact, quite a number of leading people here, the intellectuals, of course, and Meretz, a number of people came out, and apparently this was also Barak's position, But nonetheless, the ground attack went forward. And so since then, basically, we have continued the call for a ceasefire. We had a demonstration last Saturday night calling for a ceasefire. And we have been engaged in publicity on this, whether it be, you know, through posters and through vigils. We've also been involved in some of the activities here by peace groups. A number of NGOs have gotten together to send blankets and medication and so forth to Gaza. But generally speaking, our position has been, and that is where we stand today, has been that enough has been done. Whatever objective we might have had from this, particularly the issue of deterrence, has certainly been accomplished, and we are certainly opposed to hitting civilians on either side, and certainly we know that this is taking a tremendous toll on civilians in Gaza, which is something that we have urged the government to avoid as much as possible. But obviously, when you're fighting a war this type, in an area that is so densely populated as Gaza, it's obvious that any action virtually is going to be hitting civilians as well as Hamas people. So I think that's about it in terms of what I can sum up, but I'm certainly interested in trying to answer questions and if there are any.
Yeah, thank you very much, Galia. I'd like to jump in and let everybody know, if they aren't already aware of it, that there's a short video clip from the demonstration on Saturday night with English subtitles at our website, www.peacenow.org. It's also on the website of the Peace Now Movement in Israel, which is peacenow.org.il. I also want to make sure that everybody knows before we open it up to Q&A that this call is being recorded, and we hope to make available the recording on our website later on in the week. So with that, I'm going to open up to questions. I ask that if you have a question, you hit *6, and that will unmute your line so you can ask it. Hello, please go ahead.
You are a noted expert on the Russian community. Could you speculate as to where Yisrael Beiteinu and the Russian community will be on a future peace agreement or progress toward it?
Well, you know, the Russian community here tends to be conservative, and certainly Yisrael Beiteinu is conservative. And so they have been, certainly in terms of the party of Israel Beiteinu, they are interested in going ahead, going more, and doing more. And Lieberman has been quite outspoken in calling for destruction, total destruction of Hamas, and not stopping until it's completely demolished and so forth. And while I haven't seen any polls with regard to the Russian community, we know from the past that they tend to be on this side and much more hawkish. I might add, though, by the way, one thing that I didn't mention, but I assume is well known, and that is that the Israeli public has been very, very strongly behind this war, viewing it as a very just and justified response or retaliation to the rockets. The public has seen very, very little of what is being done inside Gaza. As a matter of fact, I think tonight was the first time I saw on Israeli television stations pictures from Gaza. And I have a feeling we're going to hear a reaction tomorrow, because I don't think the public, from what I've been watching every day, I don't think the public has seen anything like the destruction that has taken place. And tonight's pictures showed quite a bit. We get the figures, but it hasn't been brought home. The media here has, probably mainly through self-censorship, the media has covered only Israel, basically, showing whatever does happen, and there's been very, very little damage, as you know, to Israel from these rockets. but showing it as if it were similar perhaps to the Lebanese situation. In the Second Lebanon War, there was quite a bit of destruction, and the rockets were coming fast and furious and hitting targets. This has not been the case, but it's been presented pretty much as if we are constantly under fire, and that it's, in a sense, equal to what is happening in Gaza. But seeing the pictures, I think people are beginning to realize that this is not the case. But on the whole, the public in Israel does not understand why there are demonstrations against Israel abroad and what all the fuss is about, so to speak.
With the destruction in Gaza, will it be possible for Shikaki to do any work there? And when are Shikaki and the Truman Institute expected to report?
Oh, I think that's a very good question. Right now, I don't think we can talk about the population in Gaza. Certainly in the West Bank, one could begin polling, and I'm sure they do. But Gaza, the situation is... It really looks much like parts of Europe looked after World War II. It's been very badly hit. So it's going to take time and a good deal of money to rebuild the infrastructure, whether it's sewage or telephones or electricity or whatever it is. It's going to take a long time. And, of course, we don't know what kind of access there will be to even begin to reach the public there to find out what they're thinking. That's, I think, pretty far down the road.
Thank you.
I think we're ready for the next question. I'd also like to ask individuals to introduce themselves as they ask their question.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Hi, this is Warren Spielberg. Hi, Dahlia.
Hello, Warren.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Could you clarify the positions within Peace Now regarding engagement with Hamas? Sort of tell us the opinions and differences of opinions and what the expectations are.
Well, there aren't terribly many differences of opinion. Peace Now long ago said that we should be talking with Hamas. Our theory, our position has always been that we should talk, Israel should talk to anyone who's willing to talk to Israel. This is, by the way, a very common position in Israel. I mean, not maybe right now during the war, but this is not necessarily even a minority position. There's a lot of sense, almost a pragmatic sense, that you've got to talk. It doesn't mean that people in the general public agree that we should make a peace agreement with the Hamas for the simple reason that Hamas is not willing to make a peace agreement with us. And by the way, Hamas is still not willing to talk with us. It's not just a one-way street. But there is a great deal of sentiment that that if we're going to go forward, somehow one has to take Hamas into consideration. Now, during this war, of course, the general public would like to just to see Hamas destroyed, but that's not going to happen. And so we do believe that something has to be done in terms of reaching Hamas, of at least not ignoring them. They're there. Now, it will be a lot easier if there is an agreement between Hamas and Fatah. And I, speaking for myself, and here I'm not speaking for the movement as a whole, but speaking for myself, I think that one of the mistakes that has led to the present situation was Israel's ignoring or refusing to deal with the national unity government that the Palestinians set up between Fatah and Hamas, the Mecca agreement. By rejecting that and then starting the boycott and the embargo and then ultimately the siege on Gaza, I think this is what led to the kind of deterioration that we've seen. So I think if and when this ceasefire takes place, and there is some kind of rapprochement between Fatah and Hamas, I believe that we will come out in favor of dealing with it, even though it contains also Hamas, for the simple reason that the Hamas can't be ignored, and there really will be no way to go ahead. If you've got population of the Palestinians supporting Hamas, you can't ignore it. But this is not a main issue with Israel, with Peace Now at the moment. From our position has always been that Israel should, of course, continue negotiating with the Palestine Authority, with the PLO, with Abu Mazen. Obviously, these are our partners. There's no question about it. But if there is a possibility of reaching something that is going to last, to stick, I think at this point in time it's going to have to include Hamas in some form or another.
And just a brief follow-up. Are you aware of moderates within Hamas, and have you met any personally, or do you know people who...
I personally have, also not so moderate. So I've mainly just as in my capacity in academic affairs and in academic meetings abroad. I have definitely, and I can certainly say with some authority, that Hamas is not interested in a peace agreement with Israel. Hamas is interested, or there are elements in Hamas who certainly talk about a long-term hudna, maybe 15 years, in exchange for our withdrawal to the 4 June 67 lines. Well, I don't think Israel's going to withdraw to those lines for a 15-year hudna.
Right.
I think the best, to be frank with you, I think the best that we can hope for is something similar to what could have happened after the Mecca Agreement. And that is a situation, now this may be far-fetched considering what has happened since then, but the possibility that I could see would be for another national unity government between Fatah and Hamas, in which Hamas gives Fatah, or in fact the PLO, the go-ahead to negotiate with Israel on the condition that if an agreement is reached of any kind with Israel, it be put to a referendum of the Palestinian people. That was the situation before, and that's the thing that we unfortunately ignored. If that can be achieved again, then we can go back to the position or the strategy that we had once upon a time, we meaning the Israeli government, of strengthening, of reaching an agreement. Because that's the only way, really, to weaken Hamas. If there really were an agreement, a peace agreement, that ends the occupation and creates a state, a Palestinian state in the West Bank and Gaza, the Palestinian people will not continue to support Hamas. Hamas would then be in the role of the spoilers, and they would not have the support they have today. The only reason they have the support they have today is that there has been no progress towards ending the occupation and reaching a two-state solution. So this is probably the only path that's going to be open to us.
Okay, thank you.
Galia, this is Matt Stamp.
Hi.
How do you see this impacting the upcoming elections? And as such, any hope for negotiations or movements toward peace?
Well, the war has certainly strengthened Barak. The cynics would say that it was that Barak timed it for just that purpose. And by the way, it's not completely far fetched. Since we're talking about and preparing this war for a long time, it was Israel that actually broke the ceasefire that led to the escalation that led to this invasion. So it's conceivable. I think it may just be a cynic's interpretation. But there is certainly no question that Barak has now improved his position. Labor has gone up to, I think the polls have them around 16 seats now, where they had only 11 before the war. And there's much talk now of the possibility of some kind of tie between the camps, so to speak. The left center and the right center, or the center left and the center right. And there is a lot of talk of the Netanyahu government where Barak remains defense minister. And if I had to guess, I would say that's not far off. Tzipi Livni, of course, has lost in ground, and Kadima have lost ground, because this war is perceived as being a very, in Israeli eyes, is very successful militarily. The military is operating beautifully. This is all the Barak's credit, they say. And the diplomatic side has been neglected and poorly handled. And that, of course, doesn't help Tzipi Livni. So when I say diplomatic side, I mean specifically preventing the UN Security Council resolution, which is perceived by Israel as negative and a failure on the part of Israel, and the fact that there really hasn't been any progress towards ending the conflict on Israeli terms. So in terms of the elections, certainly Barak has been boosted. Bibi Netanyahu has always been in a good position. He certainly hasn't lost anything. He's just been playing the very good statesman of supporting the government at this time. And Tzipi Livni and Meretz, by the way, have lost. But anything can happen. Anything can happen. Anything can happen in the field right now. And anything can happen in the months or less than a month left until elections. But this particular moment in time, and there'll be more polls on Friday, of course, but at this particular moment in time, the idea of the possibility of a Netanyahu-Barak government is very, very real. What that means for the peace process, I think it means there'll be no peace process, but I think that that will be the case whoever is in a government with Netanyahu.
This is Joel Levitt. Is there any chance that the PA will be able to take the lead in reconstructing Gaza and that they will be credited for it?
Well, I if you'd asked me that yesterday, I would have said, I don't see how it could happen. How can the PA and Abu Mazen come in there, roll in there on the heels of Israeli tanks? But the talk about Hamas, Fatah, rapprochement suggests that maybe it could happen. So I really just have to refrain from answering that at all. It's certainly what Israel wants, and Israel may have to accept that it will be a joint Fatah-Hamas venture. But certainly Israel wants the PA there, and by the way, Egypt wants the PA there. Egypt wants the PA on the border. And Hamas so far has refused it. So the only way it's going to come about, I think, is if there is some kind of cooperation between Fatah and Hamas.
Thanks.
What can Peace Now in Israel do to support the American Jews in this very anti-Semitic, anti-Israel
kind of this is a terrible situation, and I know. And I'll tell you, first of all, one of the reasons that we started to demonstrate here was that we heard from our people, from our young people, that there were demonstrations at the universities, and one of them was telling us in Jerusalem, where you had this was in the very early part of the war, you had a group of Arab students on one side shouting awful things, of course, and a group of right wing Jewish students on the other side shouting equally awful things. And what her comment was that we have to be there because there was no way for a Zionist leftist or a Zionist peacenik to have a voice. And that was one of the reasons that we came out, because there is a sentiment of people who understand the perhaps the need for an Israeli response to the Qassam rockets, but who do not support continuing the war and support the kinds of things that are being done. And so this is one of the reasons that we came out, and it's also one of the reasons, by the way, that Meretz came out. It's basically the party that is in most agreement with Peace Now, because Labor is part of the government right now. But in any case, what I want to add, which is part of your problem, is that the media here, and I can't say what the reason is, does not give coverage to any kind, to the Jewish response or the Zionist response, let's put it that way. You see a good deal of coverage of Arab demonstrations in Nazareth or in Nisraha, in Arab towns, where the demonstrators are Arabs, and even where there are demonstrations that have been joint, they don't present them as joint. And they did give our demonstration coverage, and I think this was important because What happens is, as you know, you do get radical Jewish demonstrators who are generally anti-Zionist, and the slogans are not going to be necessarily the ones that we would like to see. And the first time that you had media coverage to Jews demonstrating was our demonstration last week, and that's because the signs were very clear. It's very clear that we are the Zionist left. And that did provide, and this is what we heard from people, it provided an opportunity, a voice for the Zionist left, for people who are not going to agree with the radical extreme, but on the other hand do not agree with what's happening in Gaza. So I think it's very important. Now, how you do that abroad, first of all, you don't get that message abroad. The international coverage for a long time has not covered what we would call the sane Israel. They like to show radicalism. They like to show settlers. They like to show generals who are saying awful things, or Lieberman. It's very hard, I believe, to get the kind of coverage that I think you probably need.
Daria, can I jump in on that note?
Sure.
And maybe help out, because this is a very real issue, and it's something that we at APN have been trying to address very aggressively over the course of the last 2.5-3 weeks. In particular, we always look to highlight the voices coming from Israel that are, as Daria described, both sane and moderate, and promoting a peace agenda. And we do that on a routine basis, through our weekly emails. But especially over the last 3 weeks, we've really taken on the initiative to put much more material out. We know we don't want to put too much out into people's email inboxes, but we have nearly every day new content, new reports up on our website. We have, through our spokesperson, Ori Neer, done a series of short 3-minute interviews that you can hear with leaders of Peace Now and other activists and analysts in Israel, in the United States, among the Palestinians, among international agencies that are relating to this, to really bring a depth and breadth of reporting and information to people to make it accessible to them, and that it's not, as we've been talking, necessarily reported in what we see in the newspapers. So this is a really critical need, and one way to address it is through the resources that we're trying to bring to the fore. Daria, is there anything that you want to add, or let's take one final question. Go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Hedda Matheson, and I'm calling from Valentine, Nebraska, and I just had a question. Thinking back on how the United States handled World War II, is there any possibility that in the wake of this war, the Israeli army or government or humanitarian workers would, do you think, would be going into Gaza and helping the Palestinians in their back on their feet, so to speak, the way the United States did after World War II in both Germany and Japan? That was one of the big differences, because after World War I, there was... Germany, for instance, was conquered and then left.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
that kind of brought the Nazis into being.
I think that it's quite clear that Israel is going to have to play a role in the rebuilding of Gaza, because it's going to take enormous sums. It's going to take a tremendous effort. And I think Israel will be involved. Now, already there have been these 3-hour lulls in the fighting every day for humanitarian purposes, and there's been an offer anyway to take people out to Israeli hospitals, an offer that's been rejected so far. It's very delicate, though, because the last thing that Israel or the Palestinians want, actually, is to reoccupy Gaza. That is, to be there in occupation, provide services, From the Palestinian point of view, that's its occupation. From Israeli point of view, they don't want the responsibility for as an occupying power to for everything. And so long as we are there, by the way, we are the occupying power, and we do have to provide all the services. In any case, by the way, legally, even when we're not there, we still do have to provide it. We're still the occupying power because Gaza is still considered occupied, even if we aren't physically sitting inside it, but controlling it the way we do from outside. But in any case, I think, yes, to some degree, we're going to have to play a role in reconstruction. But the other thing, though, that mustn't be forgotten is that, and this is, of course, a big difference between what's happened here and other wars, or at least World War II or World War I, is its conflict continues. We are still in a state of conflict with the Palestinians, and we still are the occupying power of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and the Golan Heights. This, so long as our conflict continues. So, well, yes, we have a responsibility, and I suspect that we will become involved. Even reconstruction, economic reconstruction, is not going to prevent the next outbreak, whether it's more Qassams, whether it's another intifada, or what form it takes. And I think this is something that I think Sharon realized. Certainly it's something that the government since Sharon has realized and the public have realized. There is always going to be violence. There's always going to be an outbreak of one kind or another so long as the conflict continues. And the conflict will continue so long as we occupy and there is no independent Palestinian state. And this is something that people realize. Now, there are those who say there's no solution and therefore Israel will have to live on the sword, and that's the future. That is not the feeling, though, of certainly many people here, and it was not the feeling of the government, not even of Tzipi Livni. What will happen in the future, of course, is something else. But this is the basic point. The source of all this, we mustn't forget, is the conflict. It's the occupation and the conflict, and the two go hand in hand. They didn't always go hand in hand. There was a time before the occupation, it was the conflict. But the Palestinians, at least the PLO, came to the conclusion that the occupation really is the issue, and they can live with Israel. That is to say, there is a possibility of ending the conflict in a two-state solution. That's the only way that we're going to prevent this violence.
Thank you, Galia. I think this has been a really heart-wrenching period in Gaza, in southern Israel, and for all of us who are watching from more distant locations. And I'm heartened by the commitment of Galia and all of her colleagues. Galia, who's been on the phone now for about an hour at the end of a very long day that she's had. And we, both of Peace Now in Israel and Americans for Peace Now, are going to continue to push the agenda. What we see now, what we've seen, is just how bad things can get when the peace process is ignored. And hopefully we will see better times ahead. Hopefully we'll see a ceasefire soon. And then we get back to the really hard work of creating a peace process that has a dynamic that can make it stick and can really bring us to a new reality. So, Galia, thank you once again.
Thank you.
All of you who joined us on the call today. And we hope you stay with us. Visit our website. Call us if we can be of help to you. And thank you.